Let's get on with more kind of local wildlife, if you like. This bird was singing outside my door this morning. Niall and Richard, have a listen. I'm using the voice note recorder on my mobile phone to record this bird. It is a robin singing outside my front door. It's looking for a mate, I assume. And it reminds me that we're getting very close to the dawn chorus, Niall Hatch.
We are indeed, Derek. I'm getting excited. It's my favourite time of the year. Just before I left Ireland to go on my trip here to Egypt, I could hear the birds singing in the morning, and I'm hearing it here in Egypt as well. Those Nile Valley sunbirds were singing this morning, very high-pitched, sort of almost insect-like kind of song. I'm hearing birds like sedge warbler, sound from home. They're singing in the papyrus here in the mornings. Another bird called the clamorous reed warbler singing. Bulbuls, all these exotic birds singing. So the dawn chorus here in Egypt sounds very different, but the purpose is exactly the same. The days are getting longer, the birds are getting into breeding season, into breeding mode. They want to hold territory, they want to attract mates, just like they're doing in Ireland. And this is this great natural cycle that happens the world over. The dawn chorus is something that unites all countries, Egypt and Ireland and everything in between.
And I believe that you made a recording for us.
Yes, that's right. So I got up early in the morning and I went out with my recorder and I managed to get a few snippets. It's the same function. The birds are singing to attract mates and hold a territory. Exactly the same as the blackbirds and the robins in your garden, Derek.
Isn't that incredible to think that Niall is there on Crocodile Island, on the River Nile in Egypt, and here we are, well, we're in the studio in Montrose in Donnybrook, Dublin 4, and we can hear the sound of the birds singing just as they are singing here in the early mornings. The Dawn Chorus. Our annual broadcast of the Dawn Chorus will be on the 4th of May this year. If you're interested, make a note in your diary. Okay, let's move on with some of your correspondence. And this one has come from a lady, I won't say any names or locations, but she's concerned about her neighbour because the neighbour has removed last year's house martin's nest and she thinks they won't come back. Niall, I know you've seen this email.
I have indeed, yes. And it's nice to hear from somebody who is so concerned about wildlife because our birds are struggling. The house martins, I've actually seen a few of them flying up the River Nile. They're heading back to Europe. They don't breed in this part of Egypt. They're heading back. They're these amazing long-distance migrants. And they return and they will nest in the exact same place as they did the year before. And if their nest, that mud nest that they build under the eaves of a building, always on the outside, unlike a swallow which builds inside a building, if it's still intact, they will nest back inside it again. If it needs some repairs, they'll patch it up. The good news is that if it's fallen down, as often is the case naturally, because the nests are quite fragile, and in the winter with storms and wet weather, it can wash the nest away or knock them down, they can rebuild the nest quite quickly. So my preference would be that people didn't knock them down, but the good news is that the birds will rebuild them quite quickly. What would be far more serious is if somebody knocked them down during the actual breeding season when the birds had already built them, and especially if they had eggs or chicks in them, that would be completely illegal. So in terms of people knocking them down after birds have left, that isn't against the law. I prefer people didn't do it, but at the end of the day, the birds will still build again. So as long as they're allowed to do their thing during the summer, probably no harm done.
I believe that Macbeth is on the Leaving Cert course this year, I think, or maybe it's next year. But students will know a line from it. The temple-loving martlet does approve by his loving masonry that the heaven's breath smells wooingly here. And that's a reference to the house martin nesting on the castle walls.
You're a great man for those quotes, Richard. And certainly the description of masonry there, it's wonderful because that's exactly what it is. They make bricks. They mix mud with their own saliva and they use that to make little bricks, a mouthful at a time, that they then just they dot across and make this wonderful wall. And it's absolutely stunning. And they're, you know, the amazing construction. And the male and female do it together and they can build it remarkably quickly. Just within a few days, they have this nest and then it dries. And they need to have, you know, clement weather for it, really. Then it dries and actually becomes quite durable. And then sometimes what happens, though, you will get a situation that the house sparrows will sometimes evict the house martins from it. They're a bit dominant. They're a bit bullying, I have to say. So what they do is they will sometimes just kick them out and take over the nest themselves. And then what happens is the house martins will then have to build a new nest again. It's quite this, you know, they're the masons, and sometimes other birds take advantage of their handiwork, I suppose.
That lady who knocked down the house martin's nest, she put 10 days' labour onto the pair. It takes them about that long on average to construct a new mud nest. It's a lot of work, and they have two or three broods to raise in the course of the summer. So please leave them alone, let them get on with it. It's more beautiful than your house, and always remember that.
Niall, how closely related are house martins to sand martins?
They're quite closely related, Derek. They're in the same family. They're all members of the swallow family, and they share that same sort of body shape, and the forked tail, the long pointed wings, which is designed for manoeuvrability, short little beak that can open wide so they can hoover up insects in the air. So they're perfect at catching these insects. So they are two of several dozen swallow and martin species that you find around the world. They're built for long-distance travel and migration and for hoovering up insects. They're not each other's closest relatives. They don't interbreed or anything like that.
Well, we'll be talking to Jim Wilson and Alan Farrell from Cove later in the programme. They've got cameras fixed on sand martins in an artificial sandbank at Harper's Island Nature Reserve, and we'll be streaming that here on the Moonie Goes Wild website, so stay tuned for that.